יהיו לרצוני ברית פה והגיון ליבי לפניך אדוני צורי בגברי. שלום עליכם, ברוכים הבאים. Welcome everybody. This is our ongoing series and the finale of this series entitled The Gateway to Kabbalah, Lesson 5. I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bar Tzadok, and of course you find me online at koshertorah.com. So, I welcome you all for joining me and thanking you for being here. And there's a point that I make in this series of classes, which is our Monday night open forum series. Those of you who always join me live, who make the effort, and we have people literally from around the world. We have people from different countries and continents. Literally, right now it is 2 a.m. It's 9 o'clock here in Tennessee, eastern coast of the United States. It's 2 o'clock in London, 3 o'clock in Europe, 4 o'clock in Israel. And we have people joining us live from all over. So we welcome everybody. We thank you for being up in the wee hours of the morning to join us. And I always endeavor to make it worth your while. I provide financial incentives to this group only for the period of the time of class. A, it helps raise needed funds for our organization. And B, I try to do this to inspire you to come and join and be crazy like me. Because ultimately, forgive me if you disagree, but I consider an investment in a person's psychological, spiritual character betterment to be the greatest investment one can make in one's self. Ultimately, everything else we leave behind. But what we take with us is ourselves. And that's why I teach what I do. That's why I endeavor to try to shy away from just the theoretical. I'm not interested in philosophy and talk. Why? Everybody talks. Like they say, opinions are like, how can I be politically correct and still be as graphic as I want to be? Opinions are like, you know what? Everybody's got one. How's that? In other words, everybody talks. Everybody says, no, it's this way, no, it's that way. Well, this person says this, this person says that. I'm not interested in giving you a review of opinions. When we do it, the academic courses that I have in the online school, that is to review academic material. And to give you just a little heads up, just for the sake of time framing us here, it is the 25th of June, 2012. This is a good introduction. These are the offers that I'm offering you for tonight. We're going to be talking about the 10th Sefirah and the conclusion of the Sefirot Malchut tonight. And I have a lot of material here, and if we go over our allotted hour, I'll ask your indulgences to bear with me. But with regards to these teachings, number one, I am planning to teach a course which I'm planning for the fall, which is actually going to be my third semester in the Jewish Magic Tradition series, wherein which we're going to go into ancient texts like Raziel, the book of the angel Raziel. I've also included in the syllabus the book of the angel Raphael. Most people don't know there is such a book. We're going to go into more modern texts like those of Rabbi Chaim Falaji's Refuah V'Chaim, and also peripheral material from the writings of later Kabbalists, the likes of a Rav Hamawi and the like. But then we're going to go very, very deep into ancient material. We're going to go into Kabbalistic bowls and amulets. We're going to go into the original Hechalot literature and even into the Sword of Moses. We're going to go into the Sifrei Sodot and other things, the likes of which people don't learn elsewhere. In order to have access to the third semester, people must have concluded the first and second semesters. They are presently available on koshertorah.com at a reduced rate, if purchased together, of 30%. Well, for my special students here tonight, as always, Crazy Rabbi is going to give you an offer. And if you refuse it and you turn it down or whatever, hey, you're a loss, not mine. Both courses, $720 value. Tonight until it is now 9:10 p.m., 9:10 a.m. tomorrow morning, the 26th. Offer expires then, no exceptions. Sorry you guys listen to the recording. This ain't for you. You ain't here. Both courses, $200. That's right. Save over $500. If you tell me you could do better, you go right ahead. Last week, I also offered my Ohel Moed, which is the actual continuation of this course, with the Masechet Atzilut course, a total of over 40 hours of learning. Again, a 700-something dollar value. I offered it last week, I think, for $200. I'm crazy. I'm going to offer it again to you for this week. $200 until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Two great deals. Now, one more deal. Did one of my seminars a while back on the usages of the name Yud-Ke Vav-Ke in meditation. It's $130 value for the summer only. I have it available for $50. I have another seminar that I did shortly after that on dream interpretation. That is not available independently on Kosher Torah. For those who get the Yud-Ke Vav-Ke seminar and pay the $50, they're going to get the dream seminar free as my gift. So there you go. Boom, boom, boom. One, two, three. Best offers I can make you. Go on to koshertorah.com. You can go on to the donate a dollar page on the support. You put in $200 and you write me an email. This is for the Jewish magic courses, or this is for the Masechet Atzilut and Ohel Moed courses, or you can go online and click and purchase the Yud-Ke Vav-Ke course, and I will send you the Dream Seminar. And for those who have purchased the Dream Yud-Ke Vav-Ke course in the last 24 hours, you send me an email. I'll include it in for you, just as my appreciation for you being here and supporting us. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about the Malchut. And then I want to take time to review. I want to review all the Sefirot, and this is what's going to take time. I have before me my writing, a chapter from my online ebook called Basic Kabbalistic Concepts and Terminologies. It's a $12 ebook available on koshertorah.com tonight till 9 tomorrow morning. Send me an email. Don't buy it online. Send me an email. You want my offer? $6, half price. Okay, so I'm going to be reading from it, so you should know what it is. The 10th Sefirah, the icing on the cake, is called the Shekhinah. Okay, the Shekhinah is also called this world. I'm actually just translating as I'm going along in our book here. Okay? Because everything goes in accordance to this. All the radiance, it's called the Shefa Haba Aleha. Everything that comes upon her comes down from the highest Sefirot. This is the sum of things. But in order to understand Malchut properly, we got to understand that this physical world in which we live in, and I'm going to expand beyond what our text teaches here to put things into a context. We've been talking about the Sefirot, in my opinion, the way that they should be understood, not as theoretical concepts, but as actual energy fields which are expressions of consciousness. Because remember, especially if you read my statement of 42 principles, Kosher Torah's principles, which I sent out as an email, it's on the front page of Kosher Torah. Please read them. I'll tell you what I believe and what Kosher Torah is here to represent. God's not a person. God's what I call the consciousness, the mind of the universe, the being of the universe. That's what the name Yud-Ke Vav-Ke means. If you take the usage of Yud-Ke Vav-Ke course and learn what the name means and how to use it, you'll get that. This world, the physical world, why do we even need a physical world? Well, this is the good question, because ultimately, when we want to talk about the powers of consciousness, What is the purpose of consciousness? If I am a conscious being, I think, therefore I am all, what are you for? That's the great question. So, consciousness goes through a progression. And as it goes through a progression, it embraces passion, it embraces force, it embraces energy. But all of that is for a reason. And the reason is, let's call it the accomplishment. The physical dimension in which we live is the accomplishment of all the higher domains. It is considered to be, if you will, like the icing on the cake. And many are the higher domains that seek an expression in this domain. Symbolically, it's also called the feet. So, this physical world of ours is also called the vessel. Everything congeals within it. But now, in order to understand the nature of what we call this malchut, again, translates as kingdom. And in spite of our text giving here all symbolic representations to this or that letter, relating it to this and that concept, I'm just going to mention one thing. When referring to the Hebrew term Shekhinah, which again means the indwelling presence, as I've made clear in much of my writings, we know that in the physical world is actually made up of building blocks. Think of the universe, if you will, as a grand unified Lego made with all the different blocks of all the different colors. They're all built together and here we are. What we understand about the universe with the greatest of our scientific development is insignificantly minuscule. Because there is so much in the realms of what we call dark matter, dark energy, all the more so antimatter, anti-energy, of that which we don't know. So for those who want to pound their chest with the pride of being at the forefront of knowledge, don't be so sure. I recently read a book called Biocentrism by a Dr. Robert Lanza. I highly recommend it. His premise is very simple. The 20th century sought to pursue the secrets of the universe through the science of physics. He states the only way that physics will ever make sense is to understand biology. The only way you understand biology is to understand consciousness. And he postulates that biology should be the true science used to pursue the secret of the universe. Or in other words, if everything in the universe is meticulously orchestrated for the nature of the existence of life, well then obviously life and consciousness is important. Well, go read Dr. Lanza's books. It's not a religious book, it's a science book. And his ideas, I think, are well grounded in our Torah tradition, whether he knows it or not. But everything around us is about the expression of life. There is something in each and everything which defines for it what it is, how it is, who it is, its parameters. We call that the indwelling knowledge. This is actually reflected in an old legend taught by the sages that stated that in the beginning, God gazed into his Torah and from it created the world. Now we learned that the Torah is nothing other than an expression of God's manifestation, which we call the Tiferet, which we call God's small face, or the power of balance and the foundation. So therefore, if Torah is the instruction or the law, what it creates nature other than the laws of nature. So therefore, natural law is an expression of the Torah. Or if you want me to say it in religious terms, if God gazed into the Torah and from the Torah created the universe, then that means that all the universe came forth from the Torah. That means that the Torah should be able to be found within everything in the universe. And indeed, This is true. This is why I encourage people to close the books of religion and to go out into the world and explore and discover Torah in absolutely everything. Because Torah is there. But I'm going out in the walk in my woods, and I can go by a wasp buzzing around my head. Right? Saying, oh, kill it, kill it. I said, no, this too has life. This too has sentience. This too has a purpose. And there is Torah in the wasp. So rather than be afraid of it, I just say, shalom. If it's going to sting me, then I guess I'm going to get stung, whether I say shalom or try to kill it or whatever. But that's not my focus. My focus is to explore. So, within that context, you will find that many of our sages of old lived exactly in this way. So ultimately, what we do is learn from nature how to be natural. This is one of my most important points. The Shekhinah, God's presence, is also called the angel of Hashem, the angel of God. Now, it's interesting that many times you will see in Scripture, it speaks of the Malach of Elohim, or the Malach of Yudkei Vavkei. And it's interesting that there is a distinguishment between the two. If you remember when we learned about the progressive forces in their manifestation, we learned about God's name being Hashem, which is again Yudkei Vavkei of the armies, Tzavaot, and Elohim of the Tzavaot. There are numerous races of older beings in variable dimensions, some above and some within this dimension, which interact and whose job it is to be the conduit to make sure that what we call the operation operates successfully. Human history is guided by an underground cabal, not of Jews, not of Masons, not of Catholics, and not of Illuminati or any of these others, but of angels. Watch your angels, Daniel 4:14. And they're the ones who, from their secret lair in inner earth, control and direct everything that goes on here, because that's the way it was meant to be. They are called the Malachei Elohim, the messengers of Elohim. And the Bible refers to them as the Elohim Acherim, the other, in quote, or lowercase g, gods. They're there. That's their job. The Malachei Yudkei Vavkei, they are in a higher dimensional plane. And sometimes the Malachei Yudkei Vavkei and the Malachei Elohim, sometimes they don't get along with one another. This is actually reflected in what we saw in the book of Daniel. When the angel Gabriel came to Daniel, or tried to come to Daniel in Persia, and the Malach Elohim of Persia held the Malach Yudkei Vavkei Gabriel back until Michael had to come and then settle things. And you could say, gee, what's going on over there? And it is an interesting reflection that Rabbi Avraham Azulai writes in his Hesed L'Avraham that these angels of Elohim, these messengers, these watchers, fight, bicker, and argue with one another. He says, like rams bucking horns. He says, that's why we have wars here below. And Yosef here in text beat me to it. It actually sounds awfully familiar to like many of the legends we read in ancient mythologies, whether in the Greek traditions of the gods of Olympus or in the Norse traditions of the gods of Asgard. I would postulate so far to say that I bet you those are based on truth. I'll bet you there really is, or I should say was, a Thor, or a Hercules, or a Zeus, or an Odin. And they were probably amongst this angelic class. So therefore, to think that this is all fantasy, maybe it is. Then again, maybe it's not. So this physical world, and everything in it, is what is also referred to as the house. It is called the bride. Why is it called the bride? Because the bride is the one who receives everything. The symbolic metaphor of the physical world is referred to as a feminine, female. Why? Because as we know from human biology, the woman receives from above. That's the natural position. And so, symbolically speaking, we relate to the higher world and the lower world as the giver and the receiver, male and female. It is needless to say, all symbolic, but the symbolism applies. And we are taught to be in a proper relationship to the forces and powers above. We also have to become receptive. Receptive to the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah, again, being feminine. So the receptivity, the Shekhinah, means that all of us, male and female, have to become, symbolically speaking, female before God. And that is exactly the position of our relationship in our present mode of consciousness. Unless one can become a receptor, one cannot receive. And by the way, what do we call the reception in Hebrew again? Come on, you all know. Kabbalah. So the real Kabbalah is the real Torah. And the real Torah is the wisdom, the understanding, and knowledge of the truth of nature. You will never observe, if you are a Jewish person, you will never understand and connect to the true meaning of the Sabbath if you are living or observing the Sabbath unnaturally. You will never understand the meaning of kosher laws if you do not understand the resonance of the energy that is reflected by proper diet. You will never understand the meaning of holiness if you project, not only in your behavior, but even in just your dress, a statement or a sense of immodesty. Everything about us is to be transformed because we, created in the image of God, embrace within us these 10 sephirot, which are archetypes of energy, archetypes of psychology. And when we understand this through experience, like the Sefer Yetzirah teaches us, we can come and acquire a greater alignment with life. And this alone, is called going home. When this is accomplished, we are then in a position to become a vessel, vehicle through which the higher power moves. That makes us a Merkava, a chariot. With this understanding, we conclude the entire concept of the Ten Sefirot. So, according to our book here, the commentator states that after this discussion of this aspects of angels and house, anything else that's in the book actually is a reflection back to the Sefirat Yesod, and is actually after the fact. So, with that insight, I don't feel bad with skipping that last one paragraph of the text here, because I want to turn now to my book, Basic Concepts and Terminologies, to review and summarize the entire Ten Sefirot. And again, take advantage of the offer. If you don't have this ebook, $6, half price. I can't do better than that. Sit back. I'm going to read to you what I wrote. And I wrote these words, my gosh, in 1996. How long is that? 16 years ago? And I was just a wee pup. But anyway, let me just... I'm actually going to be editing. I'm not going to be reading everything because of time restraints, but I'm going to try to put things in an order here. So, in my ebook version of the Sefirot, it starts on page 4. The Sefirot are the major Kabbalistic symbols used throughout all Kabbalistic literature. It's necessary before one embarks on a course of the study of Kabbalah that one learn the essentials about the interaction of the Sefirot. So prior to this, one must learn what a Sefira is, where it comes from, and how does and they do not operate. So when God began to cause His light to shine within the primordial void, that's a chapter in the ebook which is before this one, He did not allow the light to enter into the at the same intensity that the light was on the outside, because the intensity of light would have immediately filled that void, nullifying its creation. So the amount of light that God allowed to penetrate within the void is therefore only a small portion of the brilliance of His absolute essence. God's primordial essence, or God's primordial light, contained within it many various aspects. So within God's ultimate essence, all of these aspects were completely merged together as one. With the creation of the void, each of these aspects of God's ultimate light would now be able to manifest their unique manifestations. The absolute unity is never lost or compromised. God's ultimate essence can be compared to a black light. The color black contains within it all colors and possibilities of colors, and although these are not clearly seen within the black itself, yet when the light is subject to filters, and its various shades and hues are able to be individually identified. All of these shades and hues are different as they are from one another, but yet they are still united in one in their essence. So also, as with color, there is differentiation between one and another. There are demarcated borders, boundaries, definition. Unlike God's ultimate essence, where in which there is no such thing as border or boundary, here within the void, demarcation or separation is a chosen manner through which God is able to manifest Himself through the creation which He creates. By the way, this void that I'm speaking to is what we called the halal, and I'm talking about the process of the tzimtzum. So, the ultimate light of God's essence, therefore, goes through a phase of filters, the purpose of which is to diffuse the light, to allow it to manifest all of its varying hues. These boundaries and demarcations of the light are called sefirot, coming from the root word safar, which means to count. Numbers are the primordial form of demarcation and separation. What is one is not two, nor three. Yet the relationship and unity between numbers can never be broken. The word safar is related to the word mispar, which means number, and to the word sefer, which means book. So as the Sefer Yetzirah teaches, God created His universe with three books. These are the Sefer, Safar, and Sipur. These are the differentiation of God's light within their vessels, the Sefirot. Now remember, God is one, and His name is one. The Sefirot are only tools to God. They have no life or holiness of their own other than that which God gives to them. The Sefirot, therefore, manifest to us how God chooses to act in His universe. Through the Sefirot and their interactions, we come and see God who is concealed within them. Skipping a little bit, we go now to the first Sefirah. The first aspect of the light to manifest within this void is the expression of God's desire to create the universe. Please, if you have any questions about what I'm reading, you have to get the ebook and read the full thing, because needless to say, this ebook version is making references to things I wrote in the previous chapter. So you got to get that, read that chapter, and any questions in this chapter, needless to say, will then make sense. So the first aspect of the light to manifest within the void It's the expression of God's desire to create the universe. I have all kinds of diagrams in here too. This first aspect of light entered the void like a laser beam, quickly formed a sphere surrounding the outermost parameter of the void. This first aspect of creation is the first of these 10 filters which God uses to channel His divine light from His ultimate essence to the lowest of the lower worlds. It is the primordial essence of all things yet to come. This first sephirah, the first expression of God into the realm of creation, is called Keter, which means crown. It is called crown because, like the crown upon the head, which is above the entire body and is its glory, so too Keter is above all the rest of creation. This first expression of God also has other names, which better describes its meaning and function. Keter is also called the Ra'awa Ila'a, the supernal will of the divine, for it is the will more than anything else that defines existence. Will is the force of life. So the will, meaning Keter, can also be called Ani, or I. For prior to one being conscious of existence, one already exists. Existence pre-exists the awareness of one's existence. Thus, Keter is the I, before the I can say, I am. Skipping a little section there describing the reference to Adam Kadmon. Go read the ebook. The second sephirah. Keter is the divine will, the eye of creation. However, in order for the eye to be realized and actualized, it must become cognizant of itself. The eye must translate from simply being I and become I am. This I am level of self-recognition is the second sephirah, Chokhmah, meaning wisdom. Although Chokhmah means wisdom, I choose to call it intuition. For Chokhmah is the initial grasp of awareness, the beginning of consciousness and recognition. Chokhmah is like the proverbial light bulb that lights up over one's head, revealing a brilliant idea. That idea pops up fully developed, for its source is Keter. Its faculty for recognition is Chokhmah. Chokhmah reveals inner subjective knowledge, that which is known because it is an inner truth, and not because it is an external lesson. Chokhmah is the realm of the purely spiritual, that which manifests the essence. So, therefore, the I of Keter becomes the I am in Chokhmah. The two are inseparable. Keter and Chokhmah are united as the soul and spirit are within the body. The original light that entered the void from God's ultimate essence only penetrated to the level of this Chokhmah. After this, it's the light of the Keter cloaked within the light of the Chokhmah took the place of the original descending light and continued to descend into the very middle of the void. Yet once Chokhmah has received an influx of awareness from Keter, the brilliance of that revelation still needed to be properly digested, comprehended, and understood. Even the most brilliant ideas needed to be worked out and given form. So this takes us to the third of the Sefirot Bina, which means understanding, wherein which I am can understand what it is and thus say I am what I am. Bina is integrally connected with Chokhmah and Keter, but the original light of God's absolute essence did not directly descend here. The third Sefirah. Bina is the cognitive form where the flash of thought that was emanated from the Keter and received in Chokhmah can become congealed, comprehended, and prepared to be put into action. Bina receives the intuitive insight from Chokhmah and dwells on it in the same way a mother receives the seed from the father, keeping it within her until it's time to give birth to that which comes forth from the union of the two of them. In the language of Part Sufim, that's going to be discussed later on in the book here, Chokhmah is traditionally called Abba, father. Bina is called Ima, mother, for just this reason. It is said that Chokhmah intuition impregnates, in quotes, Bina, which is, again, I define as perception. Thus, intuition, once received and contemplated with perception, leads to the, in quote, birth of further creation of the universe. The Sefirat Bina is the level of pure cognitive mind. The essence of Keter first takes on form in Chokhmah. Through this form is completely spiritual and abstract. Within Bina, the received aspect of essence becomes clearly understood, conscious, and cognizant. Bina, the level of pure mind, pure consciousness, is thus the mother of invention. It is from within, in quote, her womb, that the rest of the creation is, in quote, born. These first three sephirot manifest aspects which correlate to the power of the mind. In Hebrew, they are called the mochin, or the brains. Bina is the left brain, Chokhmah is a right brain. Keter is the skull, that, like a crown, is on top of them both. Bina transforms the power of pure mind into action. Yet prior to the physical manifestation of action, there must first be motivation. Motivation is absolutely necessary, for nothing can be built unless the builder is motivated to build. Bina therefore transforms by the power of cognitive awareness. The essence of Keter is revealed in spiritual intuitive Chokhmah and creates first motivation. And only then physical form, which finalizes and joins all the levels together, which is the Malchut, of course. So the motivation that Bina manifests is the power of what we call emotion. This manifests itself in the formation of these next six sephirot. Although these six are unique and independent of one another, they act together as one. The first triad of sephirot is called Kahab, which is the capital letters of the sephirot Keter, Chokhmah, and Bina. Writing names out all the time is very redundant and unnecessary, so Kabbalists always abbreviate by using capital letters to refer to terms. Thus, Adam Kadmon is called Ak, Keter, Chokhmah, Bina are called Kahab, and so on. This method of expression is consistent throughout all later Kabbalistic literature. The six sephirot, the fourth through the ninth. The next six sephirot are the primordial forces that underlie the creation of the physical universe. Corresponding to these six were the, in quote, 6 days of creation. Anything that exists within the mind, be it the primordial mind or the mind of man, must be charged with an almost electric type of force in order to move it from the realm of non-corporeal thought into the realm of corporeal being. Therefore did God form the mitot, the six sephirot, which are the primordial source of emotion. Emotions charge that which one thinks and gives the thought emphasis, passion, and flavor. This is something that mind alone cannot do. Essence manifests within spirit. Spirit is perceived within the mind. The mind then forms ideas which motivate and steer the emotional tides. All emotions are based upon preconceived mental notions. One feels a certain way about a thing because one has certain ideas and preconceived notions about that thing. Change the way one thinks about a thing and the way he feels about it will also change. The six sephirot here, therefore, are the powers that transform thought, the upper triad, into action, the tenth and last sephirah. They are six in number, for this double triad reflects the dual nature of Keter's manifestation into Chokhmah and Bina. Or in other words, as the upper triad is made of three sephirot, so must there be three triads, each one reflecting and congealing the light from that which is above it. And these then now are the six sephirot. Hesed. This is the first attribute to come forth from the Mochin. In the form of columns, Hesed is directly below Chokhmah. For although Hesed comes forth from Bina, which is on the left column, Hesed's place is on the right. Just as Keter's first manifestation was to the right, so was Bina's. The zigzag descent of energy is also clear within the relationship of the human brain to the human body. The left lobe of the brain controls the right side of the body. This method of descent was established by God so that all polarities will be able to interact with their opposites, thus giving rise to the multiple forms of diverse creations. Hesed is the force of expansion, of free and complete giving. Hesed is defined as mercy, but I choose to call Hesed freedom. But this word more properly expresses Hesed's function. Hesed is always outgoing, always accepting, always forgiving. Hesed is the creative force which is always expanding outward, formless, boundaryless, without any contradiction, constriction, discipline, or limitation. Hesed is simple, pure, unadulterated abundance. Yet, Hesed by itself cannot create and support a world. For a world without boundaries, definitions, and limitations will soon fall into chaos and self-destruct. So for this reason, Hesed's antithesis came forth next. The fifth Sefira, Gevura. The Sefira emanates the force of restriction, severity, discipline, and judgment. Gevura means severity, but it's better described as a limitation within the context of discipline. When the force of heaven shines outward without boundary and end, Gevura describes the boundary and the end. Gevura says when enough is enough. So as such, Gevura is the source of judgment. Gevura is also referred to as zechut, or merit. So Gevura will only give forth that which is absolutely deserved. For us in the physical plane, we continually rely on God's mercy. You are unable to stand before the unadulterated power of Gevura. Gevura stands on the left column underneath Bina. As Bina constricts the expansive force of the intuitive Chokhmah, so Gevura restricts the expansive force of all giving Chesed. Gevura and Chesed function as opposites, constantly tugging on one another. What results from this constant tug of war is the balance and harmony of this next Sefira, Tiferet. Tiferet. This is the attribute which is called the heart. As such, Tiferet is the specific revelation of God to His creation in time and space. Tiferet is the balance created by the proper alignment of Hesed and Gevura. Tiferet is also called justice. For herein are the basic forces underlying the universe, harmonized and brought together in a form wherefrom justice manifests. Tiferet embodies and unites the six sefirot, which are called midot, or attributes. The six are many times related to the six appendages of the Tiferet. For everything revolves around justice. Justice is the heart of the universe. This is why God's holy name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, is associated specifically with this Sefira. The justice that is Tiferet manifests itself as the written Torah, which is why the Torah deals with laws. The laws of the Torah are the laws of Tiferet. They are the universal laws of the universe and the source of primordial justice. This is why it is paramount for a Jewish person to observe the commandments of the Torah. Only in this way is a Jewish person aligned with the universal forces of balance and justice. I'm going to digress here for just a quick minute to share with you a teaching from the Baal Shem Tov in his book, Sefer Baal Shem Tov, in this section called Vizot HaBeracha. If the Torah is this primordial force of natural law, how is it that we have the Torah in the form of a book with, you know, like chapters and sentences and stories in it? The question is asked in the simplistic sense. How could these stories be told prior to the creation of the universe, before the stories ever happened? Does that indicate that there is no free will and that everything is destined to happen exactly as it was pre-written? And the Baal Shem Tov writes, no, not at all. We must understand that this actually is a quantum understanding of Torah. Quantum meaning it's not in a fixed state, but in a potential state. That is the way that I think we describe quantum reality. Well, the Baal Shem Tov understood that concept hundreds of years before quantum theory was even postulated. So the Baal Shem Tov quoting from earlier sources, says that in the beginning, the Torah was in the form of just a combination of unformed letters. Now remember, a letter isn't the shape of an aleph or a bet. They are primordial natural forces. Our universe, our science, only recognizes four fundamental forces: the electro, the magnetic, and the weak, and then the strong. Actually, electromagnetic is one. Weak nuclear force, strong nuclear force, and of course, gravity. Well, our Torah teaches us that there are actually 22, which are actually 44, fundamental universal forces, of which we only know four. And I think science has postulated that they might believe that there's a fifth. But there are others out there, somewhere, somehow. And these are the forces which we call the letters of the Torah. And the letters, as a reality congealed here in this world, kind of like the observation in the quantum sense, then the story and the letters took form. Now, here is an interesting insight. We are taught that when the Messiah comes, which is a comprehensive shift in human evolution, that the Torah, the exact same Torah that we have now, which will never ever change, will actually reshuffle its letters to form new chapters, new words, new sentences, new teachings, which have always been there, but yet invisible to our eyes. These are the invisible codes within the Torah itself. So literally, by learning DNA, we are studying Torah. By trying to flip and shape and rearrange letters of the Torah, we are trying to unlock many of its secrets. Not only have Jewish scholars been doing this throughout the ages, prior to the invention of Torah and Torah code computer technology, you had the likes of great scientists like Isaac Newton. Good old Sir Isaac spent the majority of his life in a quest for Torah codes, which he was certain was there. Remember, Sir Isaac, this is Mr. Scientist. But he knew. Go look up the history. Go try to find works on Sir Isaac's metaphysical Kabbalistic studies. Oh, you didn't know he was a big Mikubal. Yeah, he was. Go learn. Very, very interesting stuff Sir Isaac was into. As were the likes of Leonardo da Vinci and others. Yes, you didn't know that probably. But this is Tiferet. And again, I'm telling you this because I want you to have an experience. No, Isaac Newton was not Jewish. You think the only students of our Torah were Jewish? Ha ha! Tiferet, getting back to my reading of the book now, because we're getting short on time. As the embodiment of justice must execute its judgments, all right, natural law. So this gives rise to the next two sefirot called Netzach and Hod, which, while they are two in number, they act as unified executors of the executors of the judgments of Tiferet. This second triad is Hesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet. They are abbreviated and called Hagat. And now, Netzach. Somebody's mentioning here Nostradamus. Nostradamus actually was Jewish. And we learn that the reason why he concealed the nature and means of his prophecies wasn't because of their occultic nature, which would have gotten him in trouble with the Inquisition of the Catholic Church, but rather was to hide their Jewish origins. A lot of secrets about Nostradamus and what he knew, but that's obviously for another time. Netzach. The manifestation of Tiferet comes forth in the right column of the Sefirot underneath Hesed and Chokhmah. As such, Netzach concludes what we call the right column by carrying forth and congealing the expansive function of the right. Netzach means victory, but it can also mean conquering. Netzach is the outgoing force that is focused specifically into bringing order and organization. While order itself might be a left column characteristic, the desire to bring order comes from the expansive giving nature of Hesed. Netzach therefore manifests the outgoing desire of that seeks to dominate for the sake of giving good. Netzach is a product of Tiferet, for it is the nature of justice to want to impose order. The position of proper holy order is an act of mercy, not severity. Netzach therefore conquers and dominates all, so as to impose merciful goodness. Netzach is the force that imposes the justice of Tiferet. Hod. The Sefira complements Netzach is Hod, meaning glory. It brings home the benefits of that which is conquered. For while Netzach conquers all for the sake of the collective good, Hod benefits from the conquering for its own personal good. Hod means glory. It is an attribute of the left column under Gevurah. For like Gevurah, Hod restricts and confines the expansiveness of the right column. Hod takes the outgoing benefits of Netzach and focuses these rewards for its own personal benefit. Thus, the justice of Tiferet is imposed through Netzach and enjoyed through Hod. The relationship of Netzach and Hod can best be compared to the traditional role of a husband and wife. The husband goes out and makes a living. He expands his energy outward to create, maintain, and expand his business enterprises. The wife, on the other hand, benefits from his work by using the proceeds to fashion and build a beautiful home for her husband, herself, and their children. She translates the outwardness of Netzach into an inward form, the making of the home. This domestic spirit, therefore, is Hod. It is the glory, the fruits of justice, Tiferet. When Netzach and Hod are properly aligned, there comes forth the ninth Sefirah Yesod, which balances out the entire Sefirotic pattern, which is again called the Etz Chaim, the Sefirotic Tree of Life. Yesod. It is here that all the upper Sefirot converge and meet. Yesod is the foundation of the Sefirotic Tree. It corresponds to the genitals, but not to denote sexuality, but rather to denote the creative energy, the libido energy that causes both creativity and creation. Yesod is born of the union between Netzach and Hod. When the forces of justice, which is Tiferet rule, Netzach, and its benefit, Hod, is felt throughout, the resulting order leads to the release of the creative spirit. This is Yesod. Yesod is also referred to as the Tzaddik, righteousness. For only when there is complete harmony and balance in those spheres, or spherot, which motivate human action, can one behave in the proper and correct manner. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew word for correct is tzodek. It comes from the same root as the righteous, which is tzaddik. For only one whose actions and motivations are correct before God can be called a tzaddik. This is one who embodies yesod. Not only does such a one think the right way, he's also charged with Netzach to bring the right way to others. So the prophet and the sage were always at the head of outreach movements, always seeking to impose Netzach, the proper order to Tiferet, so the people would benefit Hod thereby. So when all the Sefirot are in proper alignment and thus manifest creation is in harmony, the result is this final Sefirah, Malchut. The final stage of creation, the lowest of the Sefirot in the worlds. In Malchut, all of the above worlds merge in perfect union and harmony. This is possible because the laws of the universe of Malchut are different from those of the laws of the worlds above her. Malchut is the realm of the corporeal, the physical world around us. As such, Malchut enables all the supernal forces of will, mind, heart, and motivation to become unified, united, and manifest in the realm of action, this physical world. Malchut, being the final stage of creation, completes the filling of the void. As such, Malchut is the farthest away from the surrounding light of God's ultimate essence, the Ein Sof. And however, as far as she is from the Ein Sof, Malchut is still the most important of the Sefirot. She's the icing of the cake of creation. When God began to create his universe, He contracted his ultimate essence from a point from which was said to be the expression of his will to create. This center became the focal point from where the original contraction of God's light began. This center point became Malchut. Although she was the last love of creation, Malchut was the original intent in the will of the Creator. We referred to this reality in the Friday night Shabbat song, Lecha Dodi, Come My Beloved. In the second stanza we sing, Sof Ma'aseh B'machshava Tehila, which means, the Sabbath which embodies Malchut was the last in creation, but it was the first thought in the mind of God. Of all the worlds, only Malchut is corporeal. The other higher realms are non-corporeal. This becomes extremely significant when we come to understand how the worlds interact and by what laws of physics they are governed. In the non-corporeal realms, time and space are different from how they are here in the corporeal world. In the non-corporeal world, there is no space as we understand it. Therefore, in order to define how close two things are to one another, we must redefine proximity. Here in the physical world, when two things are in physical proximity, we say that those two things are close to one another. There is most definitely not true, though, in the non-corporeal planes. Without corporeal space, physical proximity cannot exist, and therefore non-corporeal closeness is defined as similarity. When two things are similar to one another, we say that they are close to one another. This is not a foreign definition to us. I'm sure we can each think of a number of examples to demonstrate this. So, for example, husband and wife, parent and child, should be very intimately close to one another. Whether they are standing next to one another or living in different cities, their closeness is not diminished by distance, or for that matter, by time. True love lasts forever. The bond of love, which is a non-corporeal entity, draws two people together regardless of physical space. Therefore, the two lovers are always together from a certain point of view. Now, we can use another example. Two peoples of diametrically opposing points of view, or ideas, another non-corporeal entity. Two people who are completely different from one another, ideologically, they can be placed in a single room and can even be physically touching one another. Nevertheless, their physical proximity does not in any way make them any closer to one another. Although their bodies touch, their viewpoints make them to be millions of miles away from one another. And this, then, is where the benefit of Malchut comes into play. The laws of physics in Malchut are different from other realms. Unlike the other realms, Malchut can serve to bring opposites into proximity with one another. These opposites can then be exposed to one another, communicate with one another. The potential herein is that the opposites can find common ground and thus merge together with that aspect of unity which is right for each and every joining. Malchut can thus unite all worlds, which is something that none of the supernal worlds can do. Although in the upper realms of Keter and Hochma all realms are united, the unity of that place are still only expressed as potentials. It is not until Malchut that potential becomes actual and thus fulfills the purpose of creation. Digressing before I conclude. This is why Keter is Malchut and Malchut is Keter. In the colors, Keter is considered black because all things are concealed therein. Malchut, everything is black because everything is received within. We talked about it being the receptor, right? This is why you have the angels of Havayah, the angels of Yidke Vavke. They struggle with one another until this complete integration. That's called the coming of Mashiach, where everything is properly aligned, where Tiferet is clearly manifest here in Malchut. That's what our whole struggles. That's why we as human souls are here. Our whole purpose is to integrate psychically, intuitively, psychologically, emotionally, in every which way, the Sephirotic pattern within us. And as it is within us, we will reflect it into the world around us. And by doing so, we create harmony. That will manifest and materialize as the coming of Mashiach. So our purpose here is the evolutionary process of bringing alignment, which means if all you're doing is sticking your face inside a page of a book, you're never going to get it. You got to go back out in the nature to learn what it is to be natural. One day, somebody wrote here in text. Not one day. Like I taught in the Wednesday night godly life class, today. Today is that day. The story taught in the Talmud, the great sage Rabbi Yehoshua meets the Messiah. Whether it's a literal story or just a legend, it's irrelevant. The moral of the story is what counts. And he asks the Messiah, when are you coming? The Messiah says, I'm coming today. Confused, the rabbi went and asked Elijah, what did the, you know, Eliyahu Navi, what did the Messiah mean? And he says, today, quoting the verse from the Bible, if you hear his voice. That's what it's all about, guys. We have within us such great potential. And all I can do is provide for you the tools to extract and open and release your potential. Take advantage of the offers I give you. I don't bend over my back specifically because I like to be contorted. I do so like the light above, so we can reach down and recognize that everything is in a circle. All the sephirot are in a circle. Everything is cyclical. Because once the light comes all the way down the malchut, what happens? Like a trampoline, when everything is in proper alignment, it bounces back up and therefore creates a circuit up and down, down and up and down, down and up. That is the process of life. And now let me conclude. Page 13 of my book. The Sephirot therefore serve to complete the pattern that underlies everything in the universe. God reveals an aspect of himself in creation. This is his will, Keter. An insight, Chokhmah, of his will manifests and is perceived, Bina. This expands, Hesed, outward to a point where it then starts to contract, Gevura. The result is a state of balance, Tiferet, which ordains the order of the universe, Torah. This state of balance order needs to be imposed, Netzach, upon the universe so that the benefit, Hod, of the creation can be received. When this occurs, there is harmony, Yesod, in the universe, and everything is complete, Malchut. This is a very concise understanding of what the Sephirot are. Yet it's not enough to understand what the Sephirot are. One must understand how they function in the universe, and then I go into the discussion of the Sephirotic world. It's called the Olamot. Well, there you have it. That's pretty much what it boils down to. That's what the Ten Sephirot are. They are not ideas. They are not to be debated. They're not to be, they're not to be looked at in a book, but rather to learn from nature. When you go out in nature, you will experience forces of expansion, Hesed, times of Gevura, places of balance. You will see and experience these things. When you go within, you will know and understand will, intuition, perception. If you want to learn and go in that path, you take my Sefer Yetzirah course. That's what this is all about. Well, this concludes the Gateway of Kabbalah. Consider it, if you will, an introduction to Kabbalah. You'll find that on Kosher Torah that I provide this material as a good introduction into all the Kabbalistic materials that's there. For those who want to proceed and to go and to take the next steps, I recommend my Ohel Moed course, and I recommend the Masechet Atzilut courses. Again, right now, special offer for my live students. For those of you not live, well, what can I do? You know, join us live and take advantage. But one step at a time. But we can make a difference. We do make a difference. Don't ever insult yourself and say, I'm just one person, what can I do? Because you can make a difference. How? Well, if you got $1 million, you can go out and help people, that's true. But every act of random kindness is one of the great things that we can do. I remember seeing that from one of the movies with Morgan Freeman portrayed God. He had, Evan Almighty? He had the character building an ark. And he said, ARK, A-R-K, acts of random kindness. Always be good to one another. Moral, decent. Seek to understand the natural forces, the natural way, the natural flow. In the Chinese tradition, they called it the Tao. It's not idolatry. Don't go getting stupid with philosophical concepts. Ideas are ideas. But just remember, it's a natural flow. And when we go with the flow, we go with the Torah. And we go with the Torah, we go with God. When we go with God, we create peace. And peace is the great of all things. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Let's conclude this class in the Gateway to Kabbalah. God be willing, in our next open forum and our next Monday night class, we'll have something new and I hope interesting and exciting to teach you all. Thank you all for joining me. Take advantage of the offers. God's blessings to you all. Shalom.